all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I was a CW-2 type helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969. I want to welcome you to today's program. I'm really excited to have you here. We're going to be talking about a great program that USAA is offering to veterans, and I'll be talking with their head of their property and casualty branch just shortly. And then we've got a couple of authors that are going to be on. We've got Fred Schofield. He's written a couple of books, former Marine. They're kind of interesting. I think one's about Atlantic City, and being a New Jersey boy, I kind of could relate to that a little bit, recognize some of the streets and so forth. And then in the third part of the program, we're going to have two guests on, Doug Sterner and Dwight Zimmerman, who are going to be writing a book about women in the military, and they're going to be talking about women who have have been awarded medals for valor. And I think that's going to be kind of a really interesting portion of the program. So we want you to stick around. If you've got any calls or questions that you might have today, you can give us a call at 734-822-1600. I want to make sure that we thank our sponsors. Without their support, we would not be able to be on the air for 17 years. So we really want to thank them, especially Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. For more information, you can go to their website. That's legalhelpforveterans.com, or give them a call at 800-693-4800. We also want to thank the National Veterans Business Development Council, or NVBDC. The NVBDC's main purpose is to certify that a veteran-owned business is just that, a veteran-owned business. This is very important for veteran-owned companies that want to do business with the government and veteran-friendly corporations. For more information, you can give them a call at 888-237-8434. That's 888-237-8434. Or you can go to their website, that's nvbdc.org. We also want to thank VBOC, as a veterans business website that you can go to that will help you develop your business, the same thing that NVBDC will do. They offer workshops and webinars, how to get your business going, how to get your business off the ground, how to find financing, and all sorts of really interesting things that are very helpful to those veteran entrepreneurs that are out there. And we're really excited to have them on the program. And we'll be running one of their commercials or promos a little bit later on. And finally, we want to make sure that we thank the Eisenhower Center here in Michigan. They have an After the Impact program that provides rehab to veterans, first responders, and professional athletes through intensive 30 to 90 day evidence-based treatment programs. These participants recovering from concussion, TBIs, post-traumatic stress, anxiety, depression, and suspected CTEs are immersed in an intensive transitional treatment program to treat multiple deficit areas. You can contact them at EisenhowerCenter.com. They have facilities here in Michigan and also in Florida. And then finally, our last three local great people, the local veterans organizations who have been helping us out, as I mentioned, over the many, many years now that we've been on the program on Veterans Radio. And that is American Legion Post Number 46, the VFW Post Number 423, and the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles, post number 310, all of Ann Arbor, Michigan. So I want to thank all of them for their financial support and helping us stay on the air here in Ann Arbor, California, Oregon. And we're supposedly picking up a station in Minnesota, hopefully in September. So things are moving along, folks. We're really happy and we're very excited to do that. Right now, I want to bring on the where'd my notes go here? Everything I have lying around. Okay. Right now, joining me on the line is Vice Admiral, retired, Jim Schring, President of Property and Casualty, USAA. And Jim, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Nice to be with you, Dale. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Thank you very much, and thank you for what USA is doing. You've got a $30 million family relief initiative going to support families that have been impacted by COVID-19. Tell me what this is all about.
Sir, on Thursday, we announced that we were donating $30 million to military-focused nonprofits and financial relief agencies to support military families who have suffered a financial impact due to COVID, due to their job loss or their spouse's job loss, and are frankly facing, in some cases, severe financial costs that were unplanned. With the $30 million donation to the relief societies and to 24 other nonprofits, we hope to bridge the gap during this time of crisis. We know that there's 200,000 service members currently deployed around the world today and 20,000 guardsmen and women who are deployed in support of the city and state governments as well in support of COVID relief operations. The final number, Dale, is 30% of our military spouses who were employed are now unemployed as of July of this year. So we're hoping that we can help them, the currently serving, and in a small way, and we just encourage them to step forward and log on to usa.com/coronavirus, and we'll walk them through the steps on how to get to the relief agencies and what the specifics are of the program.
Well, I was looking through some of the organizations that you are working through, and they include the American Red Cross, the Army Relief Emergency Relief, the Air Force Aid Society, Blue Star Families, Bunker Labs, Coast Guard Mutual Assistance, the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, Hiring Our Heroes, Institute for Veterans and Military Families, and the Navy Marine Corps Relief Society. These are, well-known organizations, and I think it's really beneficial for our veterans out there and our active duty military that are having some issues right now. You mentioned that they go to usaa.com/coronavirus. What could they expect when they get there? How much can you help out with these people?
What they'll see, Dale, is they'll see links to each of the relief agency societies, and then all they have to do is simply click on that, and then it'll take them to a COVID part of the relief society, which then can walk them through the next steps. In addition, the 24 nonprofits are on the website as well that they can go to for further information and help as well. Just for your background and your listeners' background, we gave just a little bit over $10 million back in March as well to organizations like Fisher House and USO and the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. And we're really proud of that donation, in addition to the donation that we made last January when the government was shut down with Coast Guard, Coast Guardsmen not being able to get paid. So I think we have a history here, and that's our mission of serving the military, and that's who we are. I would just also encourage, you do not have to be a USA member to take advantage of this program. So please, any currently serving or deployed reservists or reservists on active duty right now, please go if you need help, and they'll be able to steer you in the right direction with no interest loans or grants in some cases.
This sounds like a really excellent program, and all this funding is coming from USAA?
Yes, sir, it is.
Well, that's great. I've been part of USAA, I don't know, when they get out of the service, 1971. So it's quite the interesting organization out there, especially for all you veterans out there. I'm going to give you guys a little plug here. You don't have to be in the military any longer. Even if you're a veteran, you can apply to USAA for insurance. And their rates are very, very competitive, and I would encourage you to look into doing that for them. So if we get, I guess the question would be, how fast do you think that somebody could get some of this funding? How long, what is the process?
It'll be a very quick process, relatively. It'll be a couple of weeks. Dale, is a good ballpark estimate of what it will take to get the application, process it, and then talk to the service member or women, servicemen or women, as appropriate, and the relief societies know how to do this. This is how they do it. The nonprofits that we've talked to and have sent money to, like Blue Star Families, do this every day. So please, if you need help, reach out, and I'm sure that one of those organizations can help you in some way.
Right. I totally agree with you, Jim. We want to thank you so very much for what USAA is doing and for being on our program today. We're always encouraging our local veterans community, and of course across the country. If you need help, there are many, many options out there for you. You know, and I'm looking at the USAA website right now, and it's got the Air Force aid, the Army Emergency Relief, Coast Guard Mutual Relief, Navy, Marine Corps Relief. The only thing we're missing right now is the Space Soldiers, whatever it's called. Space Force. That's right.
Right.
They haven't been around yet long enough to set up an emergency relief fund, but I'm sure that they will. And so thank you very much for being on our program. And if there's any more information that you'd like to get out to our listeners, please feel free to let us know.
We will. And thank you for your service, Dale, and for the message that you carry out to the military veteran community and currently serving, obviously, as well. Just so important that we have channels like this, and your support of the military is just much appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We will be in touch. Thanks very much for being on Veterans Radio. All right, folks, there is an opportunity for you. If you are active duty military or you're in the Guard or any of these other different organizations and you need financial help, go to usaa.com/coronavirus. And all the information that you need is right there on their website to take you to an organization that will hopefully be able to help you out. All right, we're going to take a real quick break right now and come back with our first author. And his name is Fred Schofield, and he has written a couple of books. He's a former Marine, a prosecuting, a trial lawyer, all kinds of things. And then he just decided, I guess he just wants to write some good stories, and they are good stories. I read both of his books recently, and we'll talk to Fred and find out a little bit more about his background. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Are you a veteran or a military spouse interested in starting or growing an existing business? Then you want to connect with VetBiz Central, Michigan's only veteran business resource center, providing free one-on-one business counseling services, including research plans and preparing veterans to be lender ready. If you're in business, VetBiz Central offers comprehensive strategic marketing strategies to help you connect to corporations. They are one of 20 centers nationwide devoted to veteran business development through the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Veteran Business Development. Vets helping vets. Visit their website at VetBizCentral.org. Or call 810-767-VETS.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what's going on. We've got a former Marine. Well, I can't say that because Marines are always Marines. It doesn't make any difference if they retire. Whatever happens to them, they're always Marine. But we do. We have an author. His name is Fred Schofield. And Fred has written a number of books. And the two that I've been reading about lately is one called The Boardwalkers about Atlantic City. And the other one is A Run to Hell, and that's about drug lords, and he weaves history and facts in and out of his fictional stories here. So I want to welcome to Veterans Radio Fred Schofield. And Fred, welcome to the program.
Dale, it is so great to be here. We're with the greatest audience in the world.
Absolutely. We got, you know, so many veterans and civilians out there that just love to listen to our story. Of telling stories, and that's what our goal is. And you've done an excellent job.
Let me share a good story with you. It's actually not my veteran story. It's the best veteran's story, best war story I've ever heard. It belongs to my grandpa. My grandpa, Doc, was a physician. He was a urologist in Philadelphia. And when Pearl Harbor happened, he signed up immediately, which was kind of unusual because I come from a long line of Philadelphia Quakers, and they're pacifists by nature and by doctrine. But my grandpa Doc signed up to join the Navy, and what he did was follow Marines around through the South Pacific. And basically, no matter what your specialty, if you were a physician in those days and you became a physician in the Navy, you joined a group of physicians who were all general surgeons, and that became your specialty, and you patched up Marines through the Pacific campaign. So Grandpa Doc was serving in the Pacific when somebody came into his office on the hospital ship that he was floating on and said, Fred, he was also a Fred. Fred, we've got somebody special we'd like you to see tomorrow. My grandpa Doc said, that's fine. And the next day he met with Bob Hope, and my grandpa cured Bob Hope of the clap, which was my grandpa's big war story. And for 15 years after that, we received Christmas cards in the family from Bob Hope and Mrs. Hope every year. But my grandpa.
That's an interesting fact not many people knew about.
Yeah, but my grandpa, his influence was pretty strong. I thought he was a pretty great guy. He ended up retiring as a captain in the Navy. And his son, my dad, and my uncle were too young to join the war effort. But when it came time for me to serve in Vietnam, I wanted to do what Grandpa Doc did, except I was not a urologist. And I, in fact, throw up on boats the minute I get on them, and I realized the Navy was not the way to go for me.
I
joined
the
Marine Corps. And in December of 69, I was shipped to Vietnam. And it was an area called Anwa, the Anwa Valley, which was at the time what was referred to as a free fire zone, which meant essentially you could kill anything that wasn't dressed like a Marine, and anything that was not dressed like a Marine could basically kill you.
Right.
It was a place that was kind of nasty. And a place where a lot of people served with honor and died with honor. In fact, the youngest serviceman to die in Vietnam in combat was killed about 90 feet from where I was at the Anwa Combat Base. Private Dan Bullock, who was raised up in the Bronx, and they actually named the street after Private Bullock, an entire street through the Bronx for 2 years, and then they shaved that down, so he only got a block or two, which is what he had.
Wasn't he only about, he was less than 16, wasn't he?
He was 14 when he enlisted.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Platoon at Parris Island helped him get through boot camp. And when he showed up in Vietnam, I didn't know he was that young. I knew he was called the Kid. I didn't realize he was 15 at the time he was killed.
Wow.
But he was a hero. And, we still think about him. In Philadelphia, where we have a Marine Corps birthday party every year, a tiny bar that maybe has room for 36 people and 4,000 to 5,000 Marines show up every year and mostly celebrate the birthday in the street, we still talk about Private Bullock.
But he was December 1969 is when I arrived in Vietnam myself. I was down in Three Corps, and I was an Army helicopter pilot, and I didn't get up far up, I didn't get as far north as you guys were.
It was an unusual area. We were basically time sharing. We owned the place in the daytime, and Victor Charlie owned it after dark.
I think that was the same way it was all over the whole country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
at least it seemed that way. So you mentioned that you are from the Philadelphia area, and I'm originally from New Jersey myself, which is one of the reasons enjoyed your story, the Boardwalkers.
Yeah, that came to me. I left the Marine Corps, went to college. The GI Bill took care of law school up until the last semester. Then I had to hustle on my own to get through the rest of that, ran out of GI Bill benefits. But when I practiced for many years in Atlantic City, and I got to know the town above ground and underground and what was going on around the town. And at that point in time, I was representing more sex workers than any lawyer in Atlantic City, which meant I was representing more hookers than any lawyer in the world. And from that experience, which went for about 15 years, and I really represented them because my reputation was nobody went to jail if you went to Mr. Schofield, even though New Jersey had at the time mandatory sentencing for third and greater offenders. But what came from that was a story called The Boardwalkers. It's a murder mystery. I've been blessed. It's been very well received with reviewers and with folks who read the thing and post the interviews at Goodreads and Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But it basically tells the story of a mob lawyer and I did represent people connected to both a Philadelphia mob and some other locations, and a trial lawyer. And that story travels over 70 years through Atlantic City. It's kind of cozy. It's kind of nice in places. You find love where you don't always expect it. You also find other things that you're kind of afraid of at times that you might not expect it. But it's a good story, and I think it's one that guys that did the kind of things that we did would find an interest in. The other story that's kind of popular right now, and let me just take a little break here. These stories came about because on December 3, 1968, my second day in country in Vietnam, I looked down at my boots and said, what's this stuff all over our boots? I didn't call it stuff. I was a Marine. We called it something else.
Yeah, we know it. Yeah, stuff.
Okay, so we're good. But I looked down and said that, and the Marine behind me said, don't worry about it. It just kills the plants. It won't bother you. So nearly 50 years later, as they're taking out my kidney, and I'm dealing with issues related to Agent Orange and spent 3 weeks in the hospital, and an editor call up and say, Freddie, you wrote some books 20 years ago that sold very well and had a cult audience and were very good, and they deserve another look. And the only reason he didn't go further with them after 20,000 copies being sold was the little publisher went out of business and he had a law practice he went back to. And she encouraged me to take a look at them. And the one that I really like that came out of that is the other one that you mentioned, which I think is one that people in the military would turn to. It's called A Run to Hell. And it takes a look at a mob
right
lawyer
in front of me.
And a female FBI agent on their run to hell. And it all comes home to me. The people in it are real. We take a look at a number of things that lead to the invasion of Panama, ultimately. Operation Just Cause, when the United States Armed Forces became the largest posse in the world to take out one man, and that was dictator Manuel Noriega, who they took out in 1989. But to get there, there was an operation that took place in Panama, and to get even before that, to get there, our characters go through two real backstories. And one involves the mafia murder of Princess Grace of Monaco. And older vets probably will recall this. Younger ones, yeah, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But Grace Kelly grew up in Philadelphia and became the girl next door with sexual allure, which made her a big star. And she starred against people like Cary Grant, and she became an Academy Award winner with something called The Country Girl. And she also became the Princess of Monaco by marrying Prince Rainier. The Philadelphia angle of the story that Lee is connected to, who is the lawyer in that story, that story comes close to home because Grace Kelly, the actress, grew up next door to my father in Philadelphia. They were best friends, and her younger brother, Kel, who was also mob murdered, and by mob murdered, I'm talking Philadelphia mafia murdered, was best friends with my uncle Everett, who lived next door at the time. And also
you've
on the
got,
same day
excuse that, me for interrupting. Kel, I want to make sure people know that we're talking here with Fred Schofield, Frederick Schofield. He's two books that we mentioned. The first one was called The Boardwalkers. The one we're talking about right now is A Run to Hell. I was really interested when I started realizing that you were talking about the Kelly. I remember the name Kelly growing up in New Jersey. They were brick manufacturers or something along those lines, right? And
yeah, well, the senior
that,
Kelly was a bricklayer who became a winner of the gold medal for sculling, even though they wouldn't let him into the races initially, because at the time that the senior Kelly, Grace Kelly's father, tried to enter, he was declared unfit as a competitor because he worked with his hands. He was a laborer. He carried bricks. And that bricklayer became a multimillionaire with the largest construction firm in Philadelphia and had a daughter who became an Academy Award-winning actress. And at the time that she married the Prince of Monaco, the Kelly, who wasn't good enough to get into the Olympics, had more money than the Principality of Monaco. He was pretty well healed. But the murder of Grace Kelly is told in that story. The murder of her, brother is told in that story. The mob murder of her brother-in-law, who died 12 blocks and 6 hours apart from the murder of her brother, is told in that story. And then we go down to Panama, where we tell the story of what happened in the days leading to Operation Just Cause. And I know that story pretty well because my mentor in the criminal law, a lawyer by the name of Raymond J. Takeoff, represented Manuel Noriega when he was charged with being a drug dealer, drug abuser, and drug kingpin, dealing with the Medellin drug cartel, who he partnered with, who was at the time the dictator and general of Panama. And that story comes to life in A Run to Hell. Ray Takeoff, who was my mentor, was involved in the defense of Noriega, and ultimately he was involved in the greatest takedown in United States history of federal judges and federal magistrates when he posed as a bad lawyer and passed bribes in Miami and Fort Lauderdale and a few other judicial districts to judges who thought that he was just a drug lawyer dealing with drug clients. The story comes home in a lot of ways, and it's a good one. It's a moving story, and it gives us some lessons. The best part of it, I think, is that the United States military comes through in the end. As we all know, we go down to Panama, and we take out that son of a, let's call him a gun, that son of a gun. And when the United States military went down to Panama, within 1 week, Manuel Noriega had run into the papal property, the papal consulate in Panama, in Panama City, and hid there. And when our military got there, we surrounded the place. And at 6 o'clock every morning, our military blasted the song, "I Fought the Law and the Law Won." And they did that as a psychological op, to get Manuel out of that papal consulate, because it is foreign turf and we're not allowed to go into those places. But he ultimately came out, not only because we did that, but also because the nuns stole all the liquor out of the place and the priest shut off all the air conditioning. But ultimately, Manuel surrendered.
Oh, jeez. I have a nephew-in-law who was involved in the Panama adventure. And he confirmed the stories that are in this book. So I want to make sure our audience knows that this isn't all fiction. It's all kind of based on fact, and you kind of weave stories in and out of the Kelly family and the Noriega adventure and so forth. And I really encourage our listeners to go out and find these. They're both written by Frederick Schofield, and one is called The Run to Hell, and the other one is called The Boardwalkers. And they're really fun reading. And you can read them pretty quickly, mainly because you don't want to put them down. I found, especially The Run to Hell, I found is a real one of those page turners.
That's the one I like particularly. My wife likes The Boardwalkers. But for me, it's A Run to Hell, and it's because our military ends up on top at the end. I like it a bunch.
Are you doing any writing now, or are you anticipating doing
any more?
Yeah,
I've got a story in the works, and I don't know if we're broadcasting or on the internet where I can speak more clearly.
We're broadcasting right now, okay. So we have to be a little bit careful. We have an FCC that listens in.
I've got a story in the works. This is good, but I've got a story in the can. It's about ready to be released that talks about a problem that United States veterans have. It takes one United States hero every 67 seconds.
Right.
And by suicide. And I think it's an important story. And the idea was to make it light enough that it's readable and understandable to a broader audience. And I think that's what we'll get out of it when we're done. Not quite there yet.
Yeah, please let us know when that is available. September, coming up in September, is National Suicide Watch Month, and so we will be talking about that in one of our programs, I know, during September. Well, I want to thank you very much, Fred. I encourage our audiences to go out and find these books. I know they can find them on Amazon and probably just about everywhere else. Fine books are sold, as they say. And you can find a link to Fred's website on veteransradio.net. So, Fred, thank you very much for being on the program.
Terrific. Enjoyed being here. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Okay, folks, we're going to take one more break here at the bottom of the hour with our Medal of Honor. And when we come back, we've got Doug Sterner from Home of Heroes and Dwight Zimmerman, who is with the Military Writers Society, or they have a new name now, which I always forget. But they will both be on here to talk about their project that they're collaborating on about women veterans. So stick around, and we will be back in just a moment.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Marine Sergeant Grant Timmerman held a Japanese grenade to his chest to save his men. Details after this. Advancing with his tank a few yards ahead of the infantry in support of a vigorous attack on hostile positions, Timmerman maintained steady fire from his anti-aircraft sky mount machine gun until progress was impeded by a series of enemy trenches and pillboxes. Observing a target of opportunity, he immediately ordered the tank stopped. Mindful of the danger of the muzzle blast as he prepared to open fire with a 75mm, fearlessly stood up in the exposed turret and ordered the infantry to hit the deck. Quick to act as a grenade hurled by the Japanese was about to drop into the open turret hatch, Timmerman unhesitatingly blocked the opening with his body, holding the grenade against his chest and taking the brunt of the explosion.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Hey, I'm Willie Nelson.
Thousands of veterans are living on our streets right now where they're being robbed, beaten, and even killed. And if this happened behind enemy lines, we'd be outraged. So please help us get our veterans into safe, permanent housing. Donate any amount at veteransmatter.org. Or you can text VET to 41444. They fought for us, and now we fight for them. Veterans Matter.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio on this beautiful Sunday afternoon. My name is Dale Thronberry, and we encourage you to drop a line or give us a call if you'd like to with about today's program. The number is 734-822-1600. Right now, we're going to be talking with two men who are collaborating on a book about women in the military. One is Doug Sterner, who originally started an organization called the Home of Heroes, and we'll find out more about that in just a second. And Dwight Zimmerman, who is a writer of some renown, I think, and a good friend of Veterans Radio. So I'm going to start off with Doug. And Doug Sterner, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Dale, it's good to be back on with you. You almost said young men there. I caught that and you stopped yourself. You must have thought of me.
Well, you know, we're all of us are still 18 or 19-year-olds in our brain. It's just that the rest of the body's gone way beyond. So, Doug, tell me what you're up to with Dwight. What is it that this story that you're starting to work on?
Well, you know, most of my work, as you know, is just database work. I'm probably the busiest clerk typist that's not in the Army. Doing award citations. And in the process of this, over the years, as I do these citations, I run across some rather amazing stories. And I just don't have the time anymore. I can either commit myself to doing the database, which is my project, or I can do creative writing, and I don't have the time to do both. One of the things that nagged at me for the last couple of years is some of the citations that I've run across for women in service, in and out of the military, and I happened to become friends with Dwight, who is a very, very prolific history writer, and I said, good, if you want, I'll provide you the citations and background, and you can do the hard work, and fortunately, he decided to do it, so we are currently collaborating on a book on women heroes.
Okay, and Dwight Zimmerman, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Yeah, hi, Dale. Yeah, it's great to be back. Yeah, thank you.
It's good to have you back on. This sounds like a project right up your alley.
Oh, God, are you kidding? I have to say I'm both thrilled and grateful, you know, for Doug when he asked me to, you know, assist him on this project. Because, you know, he's given me the opportunity to explore and discover an aspect of military history that, frankly, was largely unknown to me. And I'm having a ball. I am learning so much, and it's just getting me more and more excited about telling stories of some absolutely incredible women. For instance, I did not know that there was a group of Navy nurses who received the Navy Cross, and then there were a group of Army nurses who got the Distinguished Service Cross. That's just, you know, the headline news of a heck of a lot of stuff, and Doug has sent me citations for a lot of women, and I'm reading some amazing material, and I'm just loving this thing.
I think it's I think it's amazing in today's world, especially that I needed to have some women veterans on the program as well today, and I wasn't able to pull it off in time. But the idea of these women, especially in today's military, that are, you know, on the front lines with the men, flying the aircraft, helicopters, jets, and everything else that's available out there. You know, the military police, in addition to being the nurses and the everything else that everybody is seeming to be doing now. So I want to make sure that during the next 15, 20 minutes or so, that maybe we can bring up some of these stories that maybe either one of you have that, you know, is kind of a favorite one or that is most unusual. I want to go back to Doug for a minute just to let people know that Doug Sterner probably turns out a book every day, it seems like. I know you had almost like a contest going with yourself to see how many books you could get out in a week, but you... But you started back with the idea of Stolen Valor, right?
Yeah, that was, what got me into this. I hated the Stolen Valor. Actually, I was doing the Medal of Honor before the Stolen Valor, but then I started finding Medal of Honor phonies, which got me into the Stolen Valor. I hate the Stolen Valor because every time I have to deal with the Stolen Valor case, it takes time away that I could spend on a real legitimate hero doing the research in history.
Right.
But I had to address it, but now there's a group of people out there that are taking it on. So fortunately, I'm not doing a whole lot of Stolen Valor work now.
But I just wanted to mention that to our audience, because that's when we first heard about you and first talked with you, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, and that you have continued on. As you mentioned, you are, you know, you're the busiest clerk who's not in the Army, just keeping track of all of these service awards and trying to get them all in one place.
Yeah, and see that, you know, even the Supreme Court, when it looked into the constitutionality of the Stolen Valor Act, one of the justices actually said, you know, if there was a database that listed the actual recipients of these awards, that would cut down on the Stolen Valor. DOD, I had legislation in 2007, follow-up to the Stolen Valor Act, that would have required DOD to create a database of all military award recipients. And DOD said that it was impossible, that it couldn't be done. And don't ever tell an Army engineer that something can't be done, because our motto is, we will try, S-A-R. And so I've been trying.
Well, it's been really interesting. I want to make sure our audience can, I know you're not as involved as you once were, but you can go to homeofheroes.com and much of Doug's work is on this website. The Medal of Honor, Service Crosses, Silver Stars, stories, wars, history, all kinds of different things are on here. So I would encourage our audience to go there. Again, that's homeofheroes.com. I know that one of our sponsors, Legal Help for Veterans, is helping keep this program going, and we're very excited about what they're able to do. But to get back to your current project, or one of their many projects probably, but one of your current projects is to locate and to tell the story of some of these really heroic women. Can you think of one off the top of your head that you think we should know about?
Well, I think right off the bat of a French woman that I got a citation for. For decades, we have always believed that Virginia Hall, who was with the OSS in World War II, was the only woman to get the Distinguished Service Cross since the beginning of World War II. And I'm typing up a citation, and for Jeanette Guyot, well, French, you know, Jeanette, they have mm-hmm. strange things. Didn't give it a second thought until it said she parachuted into France, and I saw she, and I thought that's got to be a typo, and I looked in the citation, and there was she again. And sure enough, there was a French woman who got the Distinguished Service Cross in World War II, serving with the U.S. Army's OSS, that nobody had ever heard of. So, you know, it's very interesting to find these things. And, of course, Dale mentioned women that got DSCs in World War I. In fact, the first two people to earn the DSC after the award was created in 1918 were both women.
Wow. What was their story?
Well, they were nurses on the front early in 1917, before most of the American troops had even got into combat in Germany. And during bombing and shelling, they had performed quite heroically, and their actions were chronologically the first actions to earn DSCs, with the exception of the Certificates of Merit that were later upgraded for Spanish-American War in that area.
Okay. All right. So, Dwight, I'm going to bring you in on this because I know that you know something of French. You have some French person living with you.
yes.
I'm sure that this one went over really well with your wife, right?
Oh, well, yeah. Though she confesses to not know that much about French history. I actually wind up having to school her on it, you know, when she's in class, and you know, she'll come to me later and say, what about, you know, this or that thing? And I'll go, oh, okay, you know, and I just rattle off the things. So
yeah, but at least she can help you translate.
Oh, yeah. No, that part's invaluable. By the way, the book that the title of this book is called Sisters in Arms and the Medals They Earned.
Okay.
And the most famous of them, you know, is Dr. Mary Walker, who is the only woman to have received the Medal of Honor. And hers is an amazing story. She, during her time, during her lifetime, she was the second woman to earn a medical doctor's degree in the United States. She was a social activist for women's issues, not just suffragism, but, you know, across the board. She was an abolitionist, a best-selling author, lecturer, spy for the Union Army. She wound up being captured and a prisoner of war, and she was a veterans advocate, and that's just the start of, you know, her you know, efforts. But what she made her so controversial, and it sounds silly now, but back then it was such a huge thing that she actually got arrested and thrown in jail repeatedly for this. She wore pants.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Man.
But the fact of the matter was that the gender lines were so rigid back then that wearing mannish attire, as it was then called, by women was against the law in a lot of communities. You know, you either wore a skirt and with a very confining corset, which she refused to do because she said it was unhealthy, which it was. So that helped set her apart physically, you know, from everyone. She was very active in the war, and, you know, she tried repeatedly to basically enlist as a doctor. And the War Department would accept her as a nurse, but such was the tenor of the times, they refused to accept her as a doctor. And it was only after General George Thomas saw her in action, you know, in Chattanooga, that he signed the authorization papers making her a civilian contract surgeon. And she, worked in a variety of capacities, mostly as a doctor. When she was a spy, it was during that period that she got captured and thrown into Castle Thunder Prison in Richmond. She was paroled. She was released on a prisoner exchange. And then after the war, throughout this, she repeatedly requested to get a formal Army commission. She wanted that, and she felt she deserved it. And the only thing standing between her and receiving it was the fact that she was a woman. And after the war, she renewed that petition. She actually went to President Andrew Johnson and looked him in the eye and said, I want this officer's commission retroactive to the Civil War. It became a political hot potato, and the War Department spent months doing back and forth, and finally, Doug, you can take up the rest of the story, because you know that part.
Basically, it was unlawful at that time for a woman to be commissioned in the military service. It wasn't just something that wasn't done. It was against the law. And Dwight mentioned that she was exchanged in a prisoner exchange. She actually took great pride in the fact that she was exchanged woman for man, a sense of equality for her. In 1917, there was a review of all the Army Medals of Honor, and 911 Medals of Honor were revoked, the bulk of them to members of the 27th Maine that got the Medal of Honor, the whole unit, more than 800 of them, for extending their enlistment just a couple of days during the Battle of Gettysburg. Even though they weren't at Gettysburg, they were serving in the Washington, D.C. area. They also revoked the Medals of Honor awarded to civilians, such as Mary Walker, five Indian scouts, including Buffalo Bill Cody. And so Dr. Mary Walker's Medal of Honor was revoked in 1917, and she was requested by the War Department to return her two medals, because she had two Medals of Honor. She got the original one, and then in 1901, the new Gillespie Medal design came out and was sent to all the Medal of Honor recipients. They were told to return their old medals, and few of them wanted to return them because of sentimental value, including Dr. Walker. And Dr. Walker just refused to return her Medal of Honor, and she wore both medals on her coat every day and repeatedly returned to Capitol Hill to petition for return of her Medal of Honor, or acknowledgement of her Medals of Honor. She considered herself a widow who had been widowed by her country. On one of her visits to the Capitol, she fell on the steps and was injured and subsequently died of those injuries. Decades later, Army Secretary Clifford Clark took the action to finally restore Dr. Mary Edwards Walker's Medal of Honor after much politics, and that set a precedent that then allowed the Army to go on a few years later and also return the Medals of Honor to the five civilian Indian scouts, including Buffalo Bill Cody, that had also been revoked in 1917. So she was not only a trendsetter, but she set the stage for the subsequent re-honoring of these five men.
Wow. That was a strong woman, that's for sure. For sure. Well, you mentioned that how many of these women who received these medals for valor were not in the medical field? Were there any recent medals, say, that women have earned in these conflicts recently, Iraq, Afghanistan, and so forth?
There have been a number of them that weren't in medical fields, and I might say at the outset that, my database is a database of awards above the Bronze Star, and there is at least one woman for every award in my database, every award above the Bronze Star, except for the Air Force Cross, and some of the awards are several. Most of them were women in nursing, because that was about the only thing that was available to women up until the 1970s. And of course, the first woman to command troops in combat was during the incursion in Panama, and we've had additional women since then. So there is a number of them, but also beyond just being in the medical field, some of them are in medicine, not as nurses in hospitals, but as field medics, aviation, and things like that. And there's been a number of them. Come to mind, Julia Bringlow got the Distinguished Flying Cross. And to be honest with you, when I read her Distinguished Flying Cross citation, I wonder why it wasn't a Silver Star, but she's only the 17th woman in history to get the Distinguished Flying Cross. So, you know, women have received awards for activities other than medical service.
Mm-hmm. I was curious about that because there are so many more, especially there are so many more women pilots out there. And I know that there are actually some that are fighter pilots. And I'm thinking of, you know, like Senator Tammy Duckworth, who was obviously got a Purple Heart. But and I can't remember the name of the other woman who was from Texas. She's running for the Senate. Oh, I can't remember it off the top of my head right now. And I know that she was awarded because she was shooting from she was in a door gunner's position in a rescue from a helicopter crash scene, and she was standing on the skids, you know, blasting away with this 60 caliber machine gun, and received an award. And that type of thing, I think, is just so important that we all need to recognize that women have been in the military since the revolution, but I think they're finally getting the recognition that they deserve.
And there was one Filipino woman in World War II. I didn't find her until about 3 years ago, and then was surprised to find her citation. And her Silver Star was for action basically as a combatant and as a spy in the Philippine Islands. So, you know, again, they're not all medical. Women have been serving in combat since the American Revolution. And roles other than medicine, it's just that they haven't been recognized for it.
Right, and I know that you mentioned that the two at the beginning of our interview, you know, from World War II, that were part of the OSS, you know, acting as spies and behind the lines. And I love this. I can't wait to read this book. Let's just put it that way. I think it's going to be very interesting. Do you guys have any sort of idea when this might be coming out, Dwight?
By the way, Dale, I think you're talking about Mary Jennings Hagar or Hagar.
That's it. That's her. Yeah, MJ. MJ. Every woman veteran that I know knows who MJ is. Because she's kind of just this iconic combat woman that is out there, and you know, she was credited. I can't remember what the medal was. I'm sure she got a DFC out of it, but I'm not sure if she got anything.
No, hold on. I've got her.
Oh, you just happened to have it.
Her Wikipedia page in front of me. she got the Distinguished Flying Cross, you know, and Purple Heart. That's what it looks like right there.
Yeah, she's pretty. As I say, she's pretty well known among. All veterans, but women veterans especially, and of course the women pilots that are out there in today's world. Again, kind of going back to the story though, is when do you think this might become available, or do you need more help?
Well, I'm right now. I've pretty much wrapped up the early years, which is basically I'm setting the stage. Because what it is it's not just, you know, talking about these women, you know, and the medals, but also, you know, bringing in a history of women's participation in the military. I found so fascinating stuff about women, you know, the Molly Pitchers, you know, who fought in the American Revolution, you know, and bringing it all, you know, forward. It'll be sometime next year. Doug and I haven't talked about an actual date. And so I'm going to have to punt and give that one over to Doug, you know, to give you an answer.
Well, Doug,
I'm going to have to punt that right back to Dwight because he's doing the heavy lifting on this book. I'm just providing the material. You know, it's been a book I've wanted to do for several years, and I just don't have the time. I'm literally working 80 hours a week right now, just continuing to work on my database. And so Dale was a godsend to me, and he's doing the heavy lifting on this. So when he's done with it, then we'll get it out there.
Well, I'm really excited to find out more about this. The book is tentatively titled Sisters in Arms and the medals that they earned. And we'll just keep in touch with the two of you and let us know what's going on. I was thinking of a woman that I know who is writing her dissertation on women in the military, and I might put her in touch with you, too.
Okay. And one more thing that you might find of interest that we became friends with Dwight, I put him to work right off the bat. We do have a book coming out hopefully next month that Dwight is a contributor to. As I do these citations, I frequently run across things that are just amazing. And
yeah, you can hear the music coming up because I've only got a minute to go. So what's the name of this book that's coming out next month?
This book is titled Beyond Belief, True Stories of American Heroes That Defy Comprehension.
All right. Well, we'll be excited.
Work with me on that.
Make sure I get a copy of that one. So I want to thank both of you, Dwight Zimmerman, Doug Stern, and thank you very much for being on the program today.
All right.
We're coming up to the end of the hour, as I said, and we wanted to thank everybody for listening to our program today. This program will be up in our archive shortly or up in the podcast tomorrow morning. I want to make sure that you thank our sponsors, and until next week, you are dismissed.